Okay. All right. I'm Gabe. I'm from UC Davis. It's good to be here. I'm going to talk to you today about parity horizons, black holes, which you've already heard a decent amount about, and a little bit at the end about chronology protection and shape dynamics, if I can get up to it. So obviously, we've already talked quite a bit about what shape dynamics is, but I'll just recap again if there's any new people in the audience. Shape dynamics describes gravity as the time evolution of the shape of space. So what do I mean by shape? A three-dimensional Riemannian geometry is one way to describe the geometry of space. So we start with a three-dimensional Euclidean signature metric tensor up to diffeomorphisms, and that'll describe the geometry. And as we all probably know by now, if we want to describe the shape, we start with a three-dimensional Euclidean signature metric tensor, and that describes the shape up to spatial diffeomorphisms and spatial vial transformations, so local rescalings of the spatial metric. So general relativity, as we've discussed quite a bit already, is, and as you all probably know, is invariant under space-time diffeomorphisms. And in the canonical formalism, that is broken up into two parts. So we've got a momentum constraint or a vector constraint or a diffeomorphism constraint generating three-dimensional diffeomorphisms, and we've got a Hamiltonian constraint generating on-shell refoliations of space-time. In shape dynamics, we have the same momentum constraint, as you've seen a few times now already, and a vial constraint, which in the asymptotically flat case is just the trace of the momentum conjugate to the spatial metric. And this generates unrestricted spatial vial transformations, not necessarily volume preserving. So this looks a lot like the maximal slicing condition that has been written about extensively by some of the people here, Neil again, that's helpful for solving the initial value problem in GR. But again, the difference is here that this is viewed as a first-class constraint generating spatial vial transformations rather than a gauge-fixing condition. Okay, unlike general relativity, shape dynamics also has a system of second-class constraints. So the first second-class constraint that I've written up here is sometimes called the lapse fixing equation, which I really should have written second because we have to usually solve the one on the bottom first. This is the Lichnerowitz-York equation. And these constraints don't weakly commute with the others, and they're sort of the main technical obstruction to finding solutions of shape dynamics. Okay, so why should we study shape dynamics? Well, it agrees with general relativity, except when general relativity is badly behaved. And sometimes it disagrees with general relativity in ways that are also badly behaved. And I'll get to that at the end. The constraint algebra is a legitimate Lie algebra. So unlike in the general relativity case, where the bracket of the Hamiltonian constraint with itself sort of depends on the point that you're at phase space, in phase space, shape dynamics doesn't have that problem. So that's a nice feature. This gives the symmetry group a much simpler structure, and time plays a clearer, more physical role in the theory, which, that's nice in its own right, but all of these features, maybe in particular the last one, could eventually facilitate canonical quantization of gravity. Okay, so why not general relativity? Well, it's a great theory, we all love it, but it does have some problems. So as we've heard plenty about the black hole solutions already, GR predicts its own demise, and black hole solutions of general relativity generically collapse to physical singularities where the theory breaks down. Shape dynamics, as you've already seen, sometimes doesn't have that feature. All right, another problem with general relativity is that it predicts solutions that have closed time-like curves. And this violates causality and allows observers to, in principle, revisit events in their own past. And some people think that this is a big problem. Some people don't think it's such a big problem. I personally don't like it, but there are arguments that are based on sort of quantum mechanical instability of these solutions and the fact that when closed time-like curves pop up, naked singularities also tend to pop up. So maybe it's not a problem. I don't like that you have to sort of pick and choose and discard these solutions by hand. So we'll see what Shape Dynamics has to say about that in a bit. Okay, so we've heard plenty about this already. Shape dynamic black holes are physically different than general relativistic black holes. So the simplest example is Enrique's solution, which looks like a Schwarzschild black hole in isotropic coordinates, but as we've discussed, the spatial metric is non-degenerate throughout the whole solution. The Laplace function goes to zero, but that doesn't matter in shape dynamics because we don't care about the space-time geometry, just the spatial conformal geometry. And we already heard that this solution is invariant under this inversion symmetry, r goes to m squared over 4r, and also under t goes to minus t. So the solution represents a wormhole. It has no singularity at r equals 0. It looks like Schwarzschild black hole in isotropic coordinates. It covers the whole solution, and an infalling observer would take infinite proper time to reach the to reach r equals 0. There's no singularity. So we really do have physically observable differences. Okay, so we have this inversion symmetry. It's a discrete transformation that maps the interior into the exterior and the horizon into itself. And this makes the wormhole character of the solution obvious. It also shares many features of a parity transformation. This solution is invariant under a combination of this parity and time reversal. So I was interested in what happens if we add in charge. Sort of a natural question. Yeah?
That means that it's similar to parity.
Okay. Maybe it's not so obvious, but there are certain features that you'd like a parity to have. So if you do something twice, it should. If you act with a parity twice, everything should come back to the way it starts. And that's true, right? If you act with this inversion, the only thing that changes is the Laplace, right? Changes its sign.
But are we changing left to right? It doesn't seem like the analogy is not exact.
I'm not being literal here. I'm
right,
saying.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's what I just.
Let's call this thing a parity and see what happens.
Right.
Okay. Okay. So if we want to add in charge, then we need to add in. We need to couple to the electromagnetic field. And since this is a Hamiltonian theory, we start with the Hamiltonian for E and M. And we turn the crank on getting the coupled constraints out. We get this new set of coupled second class constraints. And
so can I just make one remark about this? So it's true that you should solve both. But the first one arises as a second class constraint with respect this extended constraint, that's true. But the second one, it's more analogous to the inverse Dirac matrix that you would get upon phase space reduction. This is, you can call it a constraint in the sense that you have to solve it, but it actually tells you, you should think of it as a projector into when you do the space based reduction, but just a technical
okay.
Aside.
All right. So
these two equations
right here. I want to solve these. if I wanted to get the simplest charged black hole solution I could think of, I'd start with conformally flat initial data. So I'll assume that the spatial metric is flat. And then I'll solve for the conformal factor. The momentum is vanishing. The vector potential is zero. And the electric field, I'm assuming, is conformally a Coulomb field. So I've essentially got a point mass and a point charge, or a spherically symmetric distribution of mass and a spherically symmetric charge. Once I solve for the conformal factor, I can conformally rescale those things to get the physical fields. Okay. So this simplifies, this initial data simplifies the LY equation a lot because we can get rid of this Ricci scalar term here. And then we get something once we plug in what the value of the Hamiltonian is for the particular initial data I chose, we get this sort of ugly looking second order differential equation here. It's nonlinear. And basically I say it's ugly because of this power of three that shows up right here. But if we just transform the function that we're interested in by saying, let's call psi omega squared, this thing becomes more tractable. And it can be solved with a simple Laurent series on Zots. Then we can calculate the derivatives easily, plug it back into our equation star here, and we get this infinite double sum on the left. And then just collecting all the terms that are proportional to r to the minus fourth on the left and discarding all the other constants in the series, we get a relationship between q and the first three constants. So the series has to truncate, and we're left with q related to these three first constants in the series. If we then just impose sort of generic boundary conditions at spatial infinity, asymptotically flat boundary conditions, that fixes C0 as 1, C1 as M, or you can fix C0 to be whatever you want. It's just a scale. Then we get C2 in terms of M and Q. Did you have a question, Sean?
Yeah, is it the ADR max?
Yeah. Okay. So now we have psi. It's this truncated Laurent series expansion with just the first three terms, which gives us the conformal factor that we wanted. And when we put this back into the lapse fixing equation, we just have with omega in here, we implicitly just have an ordinary second order differential equation that we can integrate to get the lapse as well. And this allows us, now that we have these solutions, we can reconstruct a line element. We can also get the electric field by just rescaling it in the appropriate way that the constraints told us to rescale. Did you have a question, Philip? No?
Sorry, can you go back?
Yeah.
No, I don't have a question. I just didn't read the last sentence.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so if we look at the lapse, we see where it vanishes. This tells us where the event horizon of this black hole solution is. We find this value. And we also see, it's not something that you'll be able to see in 1 second, but there's also a parity here as well. There's an inversion symmetry of r goes to r star squared over r, just like in the Schwarzschild black hole. We just have a different value of r star here. The lapse is invariant under charge conjugation and changes sign under parity and time reversal. The electric field is invariant under time reversal and changes sign under parity and charge conjugation. So when we put all this together, we see that the solution is CPT invariant. And I put the slide in here to remind you to shake with your right hand. Okay.
Go back, sorry.
So it is safe to shake that.
It is.
Yes.
Can you go back one slide?
Yeah. Okay. Too much text on the slides, I know. Okay. So just to sort of round out the discussion about the known, actually, so that last solution I haven't presented to these people yet, but I should also talk about the rotating black hole solution that Enrique and I wrote about a couple years ago. Mostly me, thanks. You don't want to have anything to do with it. Okay, so we start off with sort of this generic stationary axisymmetric line element. And any stationary axisymmetric solution of Einstein's equations can locally be put in this form above. And it's easy to show that the ADM decomposition of this line element can be mapped onto a solution of shape dynamics. We can see that because a really quick calculation shows that the ADM decomposition of this line element is maximally sliced. And then the generic local equivalence of GR in shape dynamics, meaning that if nothing weird happens, as long as we don't hit an event horizon or something strange like that where the lapse vanishes or maybe the conformal factor vanishes or something, then GR in shape dynamics we know will be equivalent in some sense. So this is just the two-line version of showing that this line element really is maximally sliced in the ADM decomposition. We just plug into Hamilton's first equation for Q dot and impose stationarity and axisymmetry, and we get that this combination of terms has to vanish. And these things here in the denominator, so this they can only make this term equal to zero if they blow up, which they don't. And the lapse can go to zero, which might give us some pause, but the continuity of the phase space variables tells us that since the trace of the momentum is zero everywhere except maybe on some lower dimensional submanifold, that it has to be zero everywhere. Okay, so this shows that the line element I wrote down on the last slide really does satisfy the Weyl constraint. Okay, so now that we have proved this boring result, we can use it for exciting things. We should be able to write, for example, the Kerr metric in this form, and then if we can write it in a form where the Weyl constraint is satisfied globally, then that'll give us a solution for shape dynamics as well. So we could start off with ordinary Boyer-Lindquist coordinates for the Kerr metric. And if we change to prolate spheroidal coordinates, then the line element has this form here. And the key thing to note is it's sort of an ugly way of writing down the solution as these metric functions here. But the key thing to realize is that this line element, if you look at these metric functions, is an even function of the coordinate mu, which is acting as a radial coordinate in this case. So that's the kind of parity that Hamish was hoping for, right? It's a legitimate changing of left to right in some sense. In my opinion, these are all just different representations of the same thing, which I'm calling a parity. Okay, so in the prolate spheroidal coordinates, the horizon's located at mu equals zero, where the lapse vanishes. And the determinant of the spatial metric is finite and non-zero for all values of the coordinate domain. So this is really a complete solution. On the other hand, the space-time metric, the determinant of the space-time metric is the lapse times the determinant of the spatial metric. So this thing has to go to zero at the horizon. And so we see that it's really not forming a space-time here. And analysis of conformal Diffeo invariants constructed from the cotton tensor shows no physical singularities on the horizon. Yeah, sure.
Why would you bother doing that? Because you already know that it's conformally flat.
It's not conformally flat.
You just said that.
Axiomatic not spherical.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I don't think I said that. In retrospect, it probably wasn't totally necessary because none of the metric functions blow up anywhere. So we really didn't have any reason to think that there was a singularity, except maybe that it's known that the Ricci scalar has this delta function character on the horizon. So just belt and suspenders, we checked this invariant and didn't find any problem.
So that's interesting because that means that there is a curvature singularity in the space-time. But there's no...
But it's a pretty mild curvature singularity, right? I mean, it's a delta function. It's not blowing up, right? So... It's not like smoothly going to infinity, okay. Right? So, anyway.
There's a curvature singularity in the space-time picture, but there's no singularity in the conformal geometry.
That's right. Yeah. So
that's an interesting point.
Okay. So the ADM decomposition of this line element is a rotating solution for shape dynamics, a rotating black hole solution. Like its spherically symmetric cousin, it's a wormhole solution. The horizon is asymptotically invariant under a combination of this parity and time reversal. When I say asymptotically invariant, I mean actually the shift changes, and so so you have to be a little bit careful about saying that this thing is fully invariant. It's invariant in the sense that it changes the exterior by an arbitrarily small amount as you get closer and closer to the horizon. So I need to think a little bit more about exactly what that's saying, but there is still some sense of parity time reversal symmetry here. And it's free of physical singularities. And also, unlike the Kerr solution, it's free of inner horizons and closed time-like curves, and I'll talk more about this in a minute. Okay, so the CPT invariance of charged SD black holes, I think, provides an interesting link between gravity and the standard model. The asymptotic parity time symmetry of the rotating black hole suggests that maybe for something like a forgetting the name of the charged rotating shape dynamic general relativistic black hole. Kerr-Newman, thank you. Yeah, that a Kerr-Newman-like solution for shape dynamics might have the same properties. And I think I need to study a little bit more whether this is just sort of an interesting coincidence or whether there's something deeper here. Okay. Anyway, enough about black holes. You're all sick of black holes, so. So I'm going to shift gears now to talk about how similar parity horizons arise in solutions of shape dynamics which aren't black holes. So first I should say what I mean by a parity horizon. So I think the picture is starting to come together, but let me just say officially what I mean. The Laplace function, so if we have a solution of shape dynamics that has a diffeomorphism that I'm calling P and a surface S naught such that the Laplace function vanishes or diverges on S naught. I mean, it's not like a one parameter family. It's it doesn't. That's what I mean. Yes. Okay. P maps the exterior of S naught into the interior and maps S naught into itself. P is an isometry, so it acts trivially on the spatial metric. And P changes the sign of the Laplace. So after acting with this diffeo, N changes sign only. Then I'm going to call P a parity and S naught a parity horizon. And we'll see that not only event horizons have this property, but other solutions with horizons share this feature in shape dynamics. So one example is Rindler space. And the Rindler chart over Minkowski space represents flat spacetime as seen by a congruence of uniformly accelerating observers. In GR, we can just start with Minkowski space and make a change of coordinates, changing the t and x coordinates and basically leaving y and z the same, except changing them to lowercase. Then we get this line element here. And you notice that the spatial metric is the same as it was before, but the Laplace has changed from being a constant to being this space-dependent quantity here. And we can also notice that at x equals 0, the Laplace vanishes. In shape dynamics, Rindler space can be derived by considering flat initial data. And I'm also going to choose the gauge where the conformal factor and the shift are trivial. And in this case, the Laplace fixing equation just becomes Laplace's equation. So we know what the solutions are right away. They're just harmonic functions. So we can recover two different kinds of solutions, though, still, because we have the freedom to choose boundary conditions. And the first, if we just choose asymptotically flat boundary conditions, the only solution we can get is one. So boring, we just get Minkowski back. On the other hand, if we choose to put boundary conditions on a horizon at a finite coordinate location, say at x equals 0, we say we want n to vanish, and we want the derivative of n to be some constant, kappa, then we find that the only solution, the unique solution that we get is n equals kappa x. So that gives us back Rindler space from a shape dynamic point of view. And we saw that it was really the boundary conditions that were determining what exact solution we were getting. Okay, so despite the fact that the Rindler horizon is observer dependent, it's still a parity horizon. And this can be seen by noting that n vanishes at x equals 0, and that under parity, x goes to minus x, the Lapson spatial metric transform, just as I described. So n goes to minus n, and q goes to q. I'm just going to skip this slide because I'm running short on time. But okay, so just to wrap up quickly, Rindler and GR and SD. The line element for Rindler is only good for x greater than 0 in general relativity. That's not true for shape dynamics. The spatial metric is just the Euclidean three-dimensional metric, and it's valid for all values of x. At x equals 0, the determinant of the space-time metric is minus kappa squared x squared. So this vanishes, which means that we need two different charts to cover the whole solution. So we split Rindler space up into left and right wedges in general relativity. That's not necessary in shape dynamics. The determinant of the spatial metric is just 1. So we don't have to worry about anything bad happening there. And this is typical of parity horizons on which the Laps vanishes, at least. But next, I'll consider a case where the Laps actually diverges. And we see that some nastier things can happen in that case. OK, so the last thing I want to talk about is chronology protection and closed time-like curves, or the lack thereof, in shape dynamics. And before I talk about that, I'll just quickly review the simplest sorts of solutions where closed time-like curves pop up in general relativity. So the simplest ones are, again, stationary and axisymmetric. They have a surface on which the phi phi component of the spatial metric goes to 0. And so in the interior region, q phi phi becomes less than 0, right? In the exterior region, is just ordinary q phi phi greater than 0, sort of ordinary signature for the spatial metric. On the interior, this coordinate vector field associated with the phi coordinate becomes time-like. And since phi is a periodic coordinate with period 2 pi, that means that we've got time-like curves that have closed orbits, they close in on themselves, so we get closed time-like curves. That's the simplest way that they pop up. So one particular example of a solution of general relativity is the Bonner spacetime that has these closed time-like curves popping up. So k is this function here. And so the chronological horizon, if you write out just g phi phi equals 0, solve, it's very simple in spherical coordinates. We just get r squared equals 2h sine theta, where h is just a constant with dimensions of area. This is a plot of the chronological horizon for the Bonner space. I should have mentioned this also, that this is not a vacuum solution. It's a rigidly rotating dust solution. Okay, so here's a plot of the chronological horizon in the rho z half plane. And we see that it has this sort of weird degenerate torus-like shape where the inner radius is shrunken down to a point. Okay, it can be shown by playing the same games that we played for the rotating black hole solution that this ugly mess here is the line element for the Bonner solution in coordinates that make the determinant of the spatial metric finite and non-zero across the chronological horizon. Unfortunately, in order to do this, we make the solution look like a mess. But second of all, we introduce some singularities in the spatial metric and in the momentum in order to do that. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. OK, so the new coordinate system is chosen to make the spatial metric invertible across the chronological horizon. and also to keep it positive semi-definite. So the key feature is, the key thing to note again is that once we do this, this mess of a line element here is invariant under u goes to minus u. Okay, so it didn't have to turn out that way, but it happened to, that when you make a spatial coordinate transformation that is a diffeomorphism only outside the horizon, we end up getting this parity popping up again about the horizon. So this transformation maps the interior into the exterior and maps the horizon into itself. And it makes it obvious that the interior region contains no closed time-like curves, since it's just another copy of the exterior region again. And based on the sort of generic features that I'm looking at here, I'd argue that similar arguments can be made for any stationary axisymmetric solution that has closed time-like curves in general relativity hidden behind a compact Cauchy horizon. Two questions?
Go ahead.
What is the maximum slicing here?
Okay, that's a good question. I'm borrowing from the result that we showed for the rotating black hole solution. So that result is quite general. Whenever you have a stationary axisymmetric solution of general relativity, you can write it in the form that I showed, and it will always be maximally sliced when it's written in that form. So if you start from that form of the line element in general relativity, do the ADM decomposition, and then see where things go bad, then you can try to extend beyond the surface where it goes bad by making a suitable spatial diffeomorphism that makes the spatial geometry non-degenerate across that bad surface. Okay, so in this case, the phi phi component of the spatial metric is going to zero. So the determinant of the spatial metric is vanishing, right? This is this kind of, I don't know, what do you call it? It's not a crunching singularity. That's when the conformal factor goes to zero. But it's one of these type of singularities I think Hamish was talking about where the spatial volume is going to zero. And it doesn't start off being a singularity, right? There's nothing is blowing up. So maybe you'd be happier with that, and you'd be happier to keep your closed time-like curves. But if you want to make the spatial geometry non-degenerate across that surface, then you're forced to make this transformation that ends up giving you the same sorts of features that we saw for the black hole solutions in Rindler space, right? It gives you this parity horizon that gets rid of the closed time-like curves.
The fact that the metric is as rank 2 there, right? It's there's a zero eigenvalue of the surface, right? That is a shape, an undesirable feature for shape. If you want the determinant was going to 0, one would say, oh, that's gauge. But now here you have the
metric. It's the same thing, right? Say that the rank is.
No, but
it's not a vertical, it's the same as saying that
the determinant is the gauge, is the scale factor.
He's saying that this is a true shape singularity.
Yeah. Two dimensional.
No, yeah.
The metric becomes.
Becomes two dimensional. That's got to be something.
If the volume, if the determinant is zero, but all the eigenvalues, for example, are zero, that's a different story. But the ratio between the eigenvalues and the metric, now some of them go up or go to zero.
I mean, it wasn't immediately obvious to me that this thing was going to be a physical singularity. I hoped that it wasn't. But it turns out that it is a physical singularity. I mean, in my opinion, it wasn't obvious to begin with because you've got sort of one component of the metric blowing up to, you know, cancel another component going to zero. That's just what you see in Schwarzschild coordinates in a starkly symmetric GR black hole, right? There's no curvature singularity on the horizon. Anyway. So I think it's interesting that you see this parity horizon popping up also in this sort of very physically different sort of case. But as I said, things are not so nice for the shape dynamic description either. Okay, we've gotten rid of the closed time-like curves, but there's still this chronological parity horizon that's generated by still causality-violating closed null curves. And the spatial metric and momentum, the price that we paid for making the determinant finite and non-zero, is that we had to introduce divergences into the spatial metric and momentum. And if we look at the square of the Cotton tensor, we can see that this chronological horizon really is an extended physical singularity. So just to remind you what the Cotton tensor looks like, it's this covariant derivative of combinations of the Ricci scalar and Ricci tensor. And it contains all the local information on the conformal structure of a three-dimensional Riemannian manifold. So here what I've done is plot the denominator of this function. The function itself wouldn't fit on one slide, so I just plotted its denominator. And you can see that, I think you can see it best on this one, there's sort of a curve at the bottom of this function that's tracing out a shape that turns out to coincide exactly with the chronological horizon, where the denominator of this invariant is going to zero. So it really is a physical singularity from the point of view of shape dynamics. In GR, there's still a singularity at r equals zero, but this might actually be worse. It's an extended two-dimensional singularity.
What does it mean?
Well, I don't quite know yet. This is still sort of new. But it's definitely saying something about chronology protection, right? It's saying, first of all, shape dynamics is insisting that we don't get closed time-like curves. And if you have a surface that's threatening to start making closed time-like curves, that makes the solution sort of pathological in this sense. And this is what chronology protection arguments are like in general relativity too. They say, well, if there's closed time-like curves, then I'm gonna get naked singularities as well. And they don't necessarily coincide in general relativity. You can have naked singularities outside of your chronological horizon, for example. In shape dynamics, it's a little bit stronger than that. The chronological horizon itself is a physical singularity, at least in this example that I've looked at. And I think more generally as well, at least for any stationary axisymmetric solution, the simplest ones are stationary and axisymmetric that have closed time-like curves, we can generically look at this spatial line element and calculate what the Cotton tensor looks like. And again, it wouldn't fit on one page, so I just...
Can I slow you down? Just because I think this is...
Yeah, good.
I mean, normally, sorry. Like, I'm wondering if you could.
Okay,
it's just that, in shape dynamics, you want to assume that the upper Cauchy problem from the beginning, right? But everything is a Hamiltonian thing by hand. So, you're just saying that. Okay.
But I did have a question.
This
irritating dust. Does it violate some energy conditions?
It does. So this physical singularity at r equals zero has like really weird properties. For one thing, I think the like sign of the divergence as you approach the singularity depends on the direction that you approach it from. And despite the fact that in the exterior region, there's this nice, smooth distribution of dust. So there's a density function. This function that I... Let me see if I can get back.
But the question was if the
I know. I'm getting there.
Oh, yeah.
I went back too far. So this function, psi right here, that's in the exponential here, is essentially the density of the dust in the exterior. And if you integrate this thing... over a region that, and you can see that it falls off really fast. I think there should be a minus sign here. There's a minus sign. So this thing should fall off really, really fast. And so if you integrate this thing over everything except r equals zero, then you get a nice finite result. If you integrate it over r equals zero, you get zero. The mass of the solution is zero. So there's definitely something very weird going on at r equals zero in terms of energy.
Okay.
I don't know if that answered your question or not, but.
I don't know, I probably did in terms of energy conditions, which are that series of very specific conditions.
you can test it against.
Yeah, even you're asking even in the space-time picture, right? I'm thinking, yeah, if you exclude the argument zero.
Great, very interesting if your dynamics detect the unacceptable forms of matter or state equations that are not acceptable by forming a Compton singularity.
Yeah, I mean that's
cool.
That's sort of what.
Yeah.
That's what I'm starting to see here. Like I said, this is still not as developed as I would like it to be. But I think this is basically my last slide. I can skip the summary since we're short on time. But if you repeat this, if you just calculate this invariant, it's easy enough to do because the spatial line element only depends on these two functions. You get a massive thing in the denominator here, but it doesn't really matter what it is. It's something with a lot of terms that are basically, sixth derivatives of psi. So things going up to third derivatives and then match so that there's six derivatives on each term. In the denominator, you get psi going to the sixth power. Okay, and psi is the thing, psi equals zero defines the chronological horizon. So it seems like very generically the Cotton tensor is going to develop this kind of singularity on the chronological horizon, because unless all the many, many terms that don't fit on this page in the numerator conspire to exactly cancel this psi to the sixth power divergence in the denominator, you're going to get a divergence.
Right, to check what's the condition for having a regular Cotton
tensor. In principle, yeah, I don't know if I have the tools to do that one, but. Okay, I'll send you my Maple worksheet. Okay, that's pretty much it for me. Yeah, thanks.